to go to work.
Uh-huh. And, well, I was just trying to get some, a little background information on the time just before you went to work at North American. What made you decide to apply at North American?
Well, I don't know. It was just a shop. It was just a place, and I just happened to go there. It was the first place I went, and I just, you know, I was trying. I was beginning to look for a job, so they said go there, and I just went there.
Mm-hmm. Had you thought at all of going to work at the same place your sister?
No, for some reason I just didn't want to. I don't know why I didn't go there. Mm-hmm. I just went across the street. I guess I was going there next or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So, how far was North American from where you lived?
Oh, about 15 miles.
Uh-huh. And do you remember the day you went to apply for the job?
Yes, I remember. I don't remember what day of the week it was, but I remember I went. I guess I must have started out pretty early that morning, but I went on the streetcar, so that took a lot of time. I had to go out there, and when I went out there, the man said he didn't hire me out there. They had a school down here on Figueroa, so he told me to go to the school on Figueroa. And I feel like to me his name was Mr. Howell. He said, ask for Mr. Howell or tell him Mr. Howell sent you, whichever the one.
Mm-hmm. So did they not hire you right away? Or did
They hired me. I went down. It was about almost 4 o'clock. It was between 3 and 4. And he told me he hired me, and I think I didn't have to come back. I don't remember whether I came back the next day and he finished the examination and all that stuff or whether I finished it that day. But nevertheless, I was hired that day. I didn't wait. And then I went to work the next day.
Do you remember what kind of questions they asked you when you were applying?
Well, no, I don't. You had to fill out a blank, and that's all I remember. You fill out a blank and on that it asks, you know, your birth, your... it didn't bother too much about your experience because they knew you didn't have any experience in aircraft, so they didn't worry about that. Mm-hmm. They just asked, you know, did you finish high school? If so, what time or something? And they give you some kind of little test where you put the pegs in the right hole or how many you could put in so many seconds or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only test I remember sort of halfway taken was just that.
Mm-hmm. And did they have you take a physical or anything like that?
I don't remember that, but I think they did.
Uh-huh. Did, so from there, when you went in, just to go back for a second, when you went in, was the office that you went into at North American itself, right at the plant?
Yes.
When you applied?
Yes, it was there.
Was anybody else in there applying?
Yes, there was other people in there.
Uh-huh. Were they mainly women or men?
It was kind of mixed, but I assume it was more women than men.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was, see, during the war, so most of the men was kind of gone, and they wasn't hiring too many unless they had a good excuse.
Mm-hmm. And the women, were they, did they seem to be older or younger?
Well, I was 24, so they was in that bracket, up or down.
Uh-huh.
5 or 6 years over, younger or older, you know.
Uh-huh. Did you see any other black women applying that day?
Yes, it was a girl that was hired in with me.
Uh-huh.
We both left the main plant and came down there together.
Uh-huh. So, did you feel at all, when you went down there, did you feel like it was pretty certain that you would get the job? Or
yes, I did, because he more or less recommended me to go down there with his name on the slip of paper, something like that, so that was sort of more like a sure shot that he sent me there to go to school.
Uh-huh. Did you, before you went to the school, had you had any mechanical experience at all?
No, none whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
Other than that you use around the house.
Uh-huh. Had you fixed things yourself around the house?
Yeah, he fixed things around the house, such as an ironing cord, a hoe, a raker, a knife, or small things like that, but I never used any power tools.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I did. But I think I had seen power tools before because I had seen them at the school. Mm-hmm. I knew about blacksmith works. And, so I didn't know, I didn't have an idea. I wasn't afraid of tools. I wasn't afraid of things that are said like that.
Mm-hmm. But when you were growing up, had you ever been encouraged to learn things like how to use a hammer or anything like that?
No, I just took on to it automatically. I just learned it on my own. But as I said before, by me going to this school, this was a vocational school, see. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what you call it, where you had nothing but had a lot of trades there. So being a child, I was running around there. I did see a lot of trade going on, and sometimes we'd go into the shoe shop where the man was working on shoes, and if he'd get a certain something done, he'd let us help him with it. He'd let us sew a certain part on the shoe or tack the nails in the shoe or what have you. So I did see a lot of this stuff, and I wasn't afraid of it. I says I didn't mind doing it. Mm-hmm. It was all right for me to do.
So this was going to be a big change for you from the kind of work.
Yes, it was going to be a big change.
Uh-huh. How did you feel about that?
Well, what I liked about it was the money. Uh-huh. I was interested in the money. I felt like if I could make more money, I could do more with it.
Mm-hmm. Did they give you... Do you remember what you're starting?
Yes, 60 cents an hour. Uh-huh.
Did they pay you while you were training, too?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So the school was on...
Figueroa, and I can't remember what. Uh-huh. All I know, it was downtown on Figueroa Street. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't think it was 9th and Figueroa, but it was somewhere between Washington and Olympic, I assume.
Uh-huh. Did was it a big building?
Yes, it was a big building, pretty good size. It was probably about 100 feet by 70, or maybe almost 100 feet, something like that across.
Uh-huh. And were there a lot of people?
Yes, a lot of people in there. A lot of colored white. It was all mixed together.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel at the school that there was any difference in treatment between?
Well, I always knew it was, but I always was the type of person to sort of halfway look over it or look beyond it or see what I could get out of it. Because I had learned from past experience, if you're so quick to holler out, then you can get put out as easy. Uh-huh. You know, they find ways of weaning you out if you find faults too quick. So I was there, my main purpose there was to make money. So I knew I had to cooperate. I knew I had to find less force. Yes, I could see whether they made a difference in placing you in certain jobs. It was a certain department where all the Negroes went to. I forgot what the department was, but they all managed to go there. And I noticed some of the white girls did not go to that department. They went to better apartments where the work was not as strenuous or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, there was a sort of, once you went through the school,
yes,
you get placed in...
In a department, which they had, I'll just say, 15 or 20 departments. And they had a department with 17, I think. All the Negroes went to 17 because there was nothing but shooting and bucking rivets. You stood on one side of the ship, like the panel, I'll say the panel. Just the panel was as big as that wall there, and you stood on that side, and your partner stood on this side, and he would shoot the rivets with a gun and you'd buck them with the bar, and that was about the size of it. But you did drill the holes in that sometimes, and sometimes you didn't. It was just a constantly shooting and bucking rivets all along, and I knew that was not what I wanted. I knew that. Mm-hmm. And I did not know how to get out of it, so I stayed in it about 2 or 3 weeks, and then I just decided I did not like that. So I went and told my foreman I didn't like it, and he didn't want to do anything about it or something. So I decided I'd leave, so I quit. And while I was out standing out on the railroad track waiting to go somewhere, I ran into somebody else, and they was out there fussing also. And I went over to the union, and the union told me to go back inside the plant and something. They told me what to do, whatever it was, and I went back inside, and they sent me to another department where you did bench work. Mm-hmm. And I liked that much better. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, I liked it.
To backtrack just a little, I want to get back to the... what you just told me about, but At the school, how long were you working at the school?
I think I stayed there about 4 weeks.
Uh-huh. What kinds of things did they teach you?
Well, they taught me the same thing as I was doing out there. They only taught you shooting and bucking rivets, mm-hmm. practically. And they teach you to drill the holes and the file, what you had to file. And you had a hammer, and you knew how to use the hammer for certain things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just about the main thing of it. You were just taught to drill holes and use the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, I wasn't very hard to teach. I was a good student, if I do say so myself. But it didn't, and I have found out through life too, sometimes it doesn't, even if you're good, I don't care how good you are, you just don't get the breaks if you're not the right, if the color's not right.
Mm-hmm. So it didn't matter how well you were doing,
you were going to get placed in that what do we call it, the snake pit. You was going to get in the snake pit regardless.
Now, did when you went to you went through this school, did they provide all the tools and everything you needed?
No, you bought your own tools. They give you a certain length of time to buy your tools. Let's say a month, 2 weeks, or something like that, and you had to have your own tools, which consisted of a screwdriver, a pair of pliers, a hammer, a hacksaw, and few other things. I came, some cutters.
Mm-hmm.
It has some cutters and a toolbox that locked up.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to get a bucking bar or anything?
No, they punish you that you check that out of the tool crib.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of things you checked out of the tool crib, such as drills, clico pliers, and whatever else you had to use. If there was anything like files, you had to check out the files.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to check out mortars. You had to check out your mortar, your rivet gun, check that out. So they furnished you a lot of the things, but you just had your own screwdriver and pair of pliers, as I said, and a hacksaw, ping ball hammer, and anything else that you had to have that you needed according to your job. See, some things you didn't need, some things you do.
Mm-hmm. And so then you were... with the snake pit, was that where you were first placed?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. The snake pit was where I was first placed.
Uh-huh. Do you remember your first day at work at the plant?
Well, it wasn't too much different than down at the school, because it was the same amount of noise, the same routine, because after a couple of while you stayed at the school down there, you worked on the real thing after a while at the school,
mm-hmm.
but you were supervised, so you didn't make a mess, so it was all right.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't too much different, but the only difference was it was just so many more people when you went to the main plant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only thing about it. And as I says, I'm not a person to get excited and very much, so it didn't bother me. It didn't shake me up any at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I say again, I was there looking for money.
Uh-huh.
So I knew whatever they had to offer, I had to take it, because otherwise I wasn't going to make any money.
Uh-huh.
And 60 cents an hour was good money, I just want to tell you now, in case you didn't know it.
At the time?
Yeah, at the time, 60 cents an hour was good money.
Uh-huh. Did you get raises at
a... Yes, you got a raise every 3 months.
Uh-huh.
And then after you got to the top of whatever it's supposed to have been, then that was about the end of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, then you had to get into a new field.
When that first day when you went to the plant, could you describe it to me, like what it looked like to you, say back in 43 when you...
Well, to describe that one, I almost need to describe the one down on Figueroa Street, because it didn't excite me too much when I went to the one at the main plant, because as I said, I was accustomed to going, and it must have been 300 or 400 of us down at the school, so we were just stepping on each other then. But when I did go to the main plant, it was a little different. When you went in the door and everything, you had a badge to show, and they looked at your lunch at the door window, and you just walked in, and the people just seemed to have been rushing and everything, but it was just so many people there. It didn't totally excite me, because I had gotten accustomed to a lot of people, and I knew if it was a lot of people, it always meant something was was going on, it was happening. I was making money.
Mm-hmm.
and I was around people. So I didn't get carried away that way. I got carried away the way, well, I'm sure glad there's a lot of people here. As long as there's a lot of people here, I'll be making money. Mm-hmm. That was all I could ever see. Mm-hmm. As long as there's a lot of people here, it'll be jobs, and I'll be working, and I'll be making money.
Mm-hmm. Was you were first put to work then riveting?
We were first put to work in riveting.
Uh-huh. And was the... in the area that you worked, what part of the plane was it on?
It was on the wing.
Uh-huh.
A wing or the body, I don't remember which.
Uh-huh.
It was the wing or the body.
And how many people were working?
Right around that wing, I suppose, let's just estimate it, could have been easily 15 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
Because the wing was as long as this house, the part we was working on from here, I made it to the end of that dining room there.
Mm-hmm. And did, how many, you said about, how many people working there?
About 15 or 20. 15? It was on this side and that side, and then it had tables over here where you sort of put something together and then you put it on the wing. But it was a lot of people, quite a few people. You only had about that much space to yourself, about 3 or 4 feet you could call your own.
Mm-hmm. Were most of those people men or women?
It was mixed. I can't tell whether it were more men or more women. I just assume it was more men, but I don't know whether that would be right or not.
Uh-huh.
I really can't say.
Was
and it was mixed. It was mostly white men. Very few Negro men, because all the Negro men, they only gave them jobs as janitors as a rule. They would sweep the floor. Uh-huh. That was their main issue.
So at North American, most of the men ended up being janitors?
Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh. And the women were given the other...
They was given other stuff, but then there was no white women that was janitors. There was no, very few white men was janitors, too.
Mm-hmm. Did, where you worked, were most of the women who were working black women?
No, they were mixed.
Mm-hmm.
It was just as many white as it was. In fact, the business, I rather think it was more white than it was Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
Because they seemed to have hired them more than they did Negroes, though.
Mm-hmm. So the first place you went to...
Especially in what we call production.
Mm-hmm. So this first place you went to work wasn't the department you were talking about where... all the black workers got sent?
Well, no, that was years later.
Uh-huh. Awesome.
Well, eventually, I stayed there for a while, then I went into another department. When I went out the gate, I thought I was quitting, and I said, they put me in another department, which was upstairs working on a bench. That was very good, so I liked that. I stayed up there.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out pretty good. And I must stay there a year or something, near a year or something, I don't know. And then they got to moving around or something, then they put me over in another department, which was glass, plastics, they called it plastics. So I worked over in there until the end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not right quite to the end because I got pregnant, then I had to take off to have the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then while I was off having the baby, then the war was over.
Mm-hmm. So you started out working as a riveter.
As a riveter, yes.
Uh-huh.
They really called it a general helper. That's mm-hmm. what they said. It was a general helper.
Uh-huh.
But the work was riveting.
And did was the supervisor a man?
Yeah, the supervisor was a man at those times. They had very few women.
Uh-huh. During in the beginning of the day for your work, say it's first job. Would you go in and already know what to be working on?
No, you just go in. What they do when they bring you, it's like you went to the employment office and you came in through the employment office the first day and they brought you down to the department. Then he would just give you to a woman and says, here, Betty, this is Fanny, and Fanny, this is Betty, and you'll be working with Betty. Well, Betty told you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked out. That's the way it usually worked. And it... you know, and in the meantime, I assume he stood off and looked at you and saw what you're doing, or come examine your work when you wasn't there or something, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just assumed that. Been so long ago, but that's usually the way it worked.
So another woman who was working there would show you...
Yes, show you what to do.
Mm-hmm. Was there much interaction, say, on the job or during lunch or any time like that between the white workers and the black workers?
Well, they did talk to each other some, but they had... you probably know more about that than I do. They had some type of a way that they did everything they could to keep you separated.
Mm-hmm.
They just did not like for a Negro and a white person to get together to do much good and talk. They found a way to separate you, and what they would always do for you, if it was so cold, they would leave that colored person right there in that snake pit, and they'd take that white person and move him up to a better position every time.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just name you time and time again. I am a person that you can talk to, and you will warm up to me much better than you can a lot of people. So it seemed to me as though people knew they could talk to me and at ease. A white person seemed to know that they could talk to me at ease, and when everyone would start talking to me and getting things going, and we was only just talking, plain common talk, you know, just everyday talk, and they seemed to didn't like it. I know I had several lead men. They would be doing their work, you know. It's a lot of work if you're a leader. You know, you got a lot of paperwork to do. And let's face it, sometimes you have to go get blueprints. You have to lay them out and find out what's to be done on them and so forth and so on. And I was good at doing a lot of things. So the lead man would teach me how to do this and that and other. And shoot, they'd get rid of that lead man real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the next one would come right there from another department. He didn't know any better. He'd fall right in line and wouldn't be long. He wouldn't be no time before he'd discover that. And you know, for yourself, if you ever have been over anybody and somebody catches on and learn good, you kind of lean towards that person and you depend on them to do your work. If you step out for a few minutes, you say, hey, answer the telephone while I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody come in here looking for me, find out what they want, and if you can help them, help them. And you know, you start doing like that, and if the person that you tell to do that, you find out he's doing a good job at it, you discover that you'd be going quite often and leave that work for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't like that at all, so they'd always move the person who was helping me out. And looked like to me, I just got so much of that until I just didn't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm. And so this was happening during the war?
This was happening during the war and after the war also.
Uh-huh. So people would be... It seems like on the one hand they would keep people from advancing.
Yes, they would. They'd keep you from advancing. And they made it their business to keep the black person from advancing.
Uh-huh.
But in the meantime, when my husband came out during the war, which he came out in, I was there in 43, and I think he must have came out in 44. He wanted to come out there to work, but they treated the Negro man so bad until I told him, don't come out here because you will never get anywhere working at this place. So he didn't come out. He went on to work with cleaning and pressing. Then he got to the place where after I worked there so long and I was getting these vacations and paid vacations and what have you, and he was not. So then his money was short. I would get the place where I was making more money than he was making.
Mm-hmm.
So then I, and they had another thing that they would do for you. They would take you in, they had an old sheet, a rating sheet, and they'd take you in to rate your work, find out what you're doing. You'd go in and talk with the foreman and find out, and he'd ask you questions, you'd ask him, blah, blah, blah. So it was a lot of the Negro girls, when time come for them to go in for the interview or whatever you call it, they didn't want to go. They'd say, I'm not going in there and talk to him, blah, blah, blah. But when my time came to go in there, they knew I wasn't going either, but they were wrong. I said, yes, sir, I'm ready to go. Let's go on in and sit down. Since I didn't drink coffee and I didn't smoke, I didn't, you know, you can't offer your cigarette, so anyway, I got in here, a drink or something. I might have got a drink of water and went strutting on in. So they just got to talking in there, and I was telling the foreman that about one time I was sick and I had to come back to work or something, and I said, and I thought it was so low down of you. You gave me a job to work on, and somebody gave me a seat to sit down on, and here come your foreman over you. He come and snatched the seat out from under me. I said, I thought that was the low-downest thing a white man could do. I was somebody's mother. I was somebody's child. I was somebody's daughter. I says, and how could you stand up there, and I was supposed to be sick, just came back from sick, and you took that chair out from under me. You could have let me lean on that chair and do my work. I said, you wasn't considerate at all. And I says, I know so-and-so was telling you to do this and so forth and so on. And I thought that was so cruel of you. And I just told him what I thought about it. And then when he got through talking, he says, well, I'll tell you what. We do need help out here now again and so forth and so on. Where is your husband working or something? He asked me those questions. How was I getting along in life or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I told him my husband was working somewhere and making less money than I was and so forth. So he says, well, I tell you what, I'll get a... what do you call these things when you fill out when you get a research application? And he says, and I'll put my name on the application and your husband can just come on in and he won't have any, you know, problem or something like that. So I brought it on home for my husband and he said he didn't want no parts of it. He wouldn't take it. Mm-hmm. And so then I kept talking to him about it and kept talking to him and finally he decided that he would come out and get a job. But the man did give me the idea mm-hmm. that I should encouraged my husband to come out, so he finally did come out and started working there. So I guess I had softened up some about the company if I thought enough of it to tell my husband to come to work.
Mm-hmm. When was that that he went to work there?
I think he went to work in 51 or 52. I can't remember.
Uh-huh. So that was you'd been there by then. You'd been there, eight?
About 8 years.
Uh-huh.
Kind of off and on, but you see, I was out a year. I was out a year after I had the baby
mm-hmm.
because everybody was laid off, and then I came back to work in June. My baby was just a year old, and then I was 45, 46. I came back in 46, and then I 46, 47, 48, 49, 51, 52. That was about 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
I had been there about 7 years. Seven or 8 years when he decided to come to work.
And back in the Warriors when you were living by, well, with your sister and your husband was? In the service. Was he stationed overseas?
No, he just went up to Northern California, Camp Stoneman, I think.
Uh-huh. And how long was he there?
Oh, he wasn't that long because he went in February and he came out in December.
Mm-hmm. So he was in the war, but he was within the states?
In the states, yes.
Uh-huh. Do you know what he was doing?
He said he was working in the post exchange.
Uh-huh. So while you were living there with your sister, how would you get to and from?
The same way I went on a... Someone picked me up and got a ride with them. I did ride the streetcar for a while, but then soon after you get in there and you get acquainted with people, then you get a ride. So mm-hmm. I had a ride, and it was only $1.50 a week,
mm-hmm.
which was cheap.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna,